shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Don't label us left or right.
We are American.
Not looking for a war, but we came to fight.
We are American.
Somebody's gotta stand up.
Stand up.
Somebody's gotta do what's right. We're rising cause we're fed up. Got our house in order and got yours inside.
Good morning, Sovereign Minds. Once again, we are back for this Sunday, and today is April 12th, 2015. Who would have thought it possible?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by that.
We've got a fast-moving show today. We've got Chris Ann Hall, and we also have Dan Johnson from Panda.
Correct.
And so we're going to get moving here real quick. I got a clip to play. I'm here in the studio with my sister, Linda.
Good morning.
Good morning. Bob Martin, our trusted producer, soundboard operator, and all-around good guy.
Good morning, Bob. Good morning, Linda.
Got to say that
morning.
With a slur. We're streaming worldwide. You're listening to KCNR 1460. You can go to KCNR1460.com or call in at 530-605-4567 if you have questions. All of our shows are podcast and archived as well, and you can friend me on Facebook at Sovereign Minds. Reading Tea Party meets every Monday night at 6 p.m., 2570 South Bonneview at Destiny Fellowship. They stand for limited government, fiscal responsibility, and adherence to the Constitution. You were just listening to Jefferson State of Mind right before us. The quote I have today is, "Let me be a free man, free to travel, free to stop, free to work, free to choose my own teachers, free to follow the religions of my father, religion of my fathers, free to think, talk, and act for myself." Who do you think said that?
I haven't got a clue. Who said that?
Chief Joseph of the Nez Perce Indians. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, there's so much going on. I'll tell you what. Let's just get started with this clip. We got a clip here from Greg Hunter from USA Watchdog. We're going to play about 13 minutes of it, and then we'll come back and do a little commentary on it. And our guests should be here at the bottom of the hour, Chris Ann Hall at 9:30, and Dan Johnson at 10. So
Dan Johnson? Yeah. Sounded like you said Jan.
Jan Johnson?
No, Dan.
Dan Johnson of Panda. So anyway, there you have it. Go ahead and play it, Bob, and let's get this ball rolling.
Hi, I'm Greg Hunter. This is the WNW 185, the weekly news wrap-up for Friday, April 10th, 2015. And, you know, the deal to curtail Iran's nuclear program is really no deal at all. Remember I was questioning this? It's no deal at all. It is not a deal. How do I know this? All you have to do is listen to the Iranians, the top senior management of Iran. The Ayatollah Khamenei weighed in along with his subordinates this past week. And basically, he came right out and said that the White House and Obama, liars. And they they had devilish intent. Called the president a liar. Also, they came out and reiterated, listen, there's going to be no inspections of our military bases. We're going to continue to enrich uranium. No surprise inspections. And we're going to continue to do, our research and development. And, that's just, wow. I mean, they had me at liar. I knew what, you've got to be kidding me. The Ayatollah, the supreme leader, it's a theocracy, the Ayatollah in Iran, and he comes out and calls the president a liar. Deal breaker, you think? And obviously, that's not a deal breaker. On top of it, the president came out in the Rose Garden and clearly said, the sanctions would be lifted gradually, and, as they complied with this deal, the sanctions would be lifted gradually. No, that's not what the Iranians say. That's not what the Ayatollah says. That's not what the president says. That's not what the foreign minister of Iran all say. Same thing. They're lockstep. When we signed the deal, June 30th, all sanctions will be immediately lifted. What? Otherwise, there's no deal. I think there's no deal. There is no deal. And now this is going, while this is going on, this nastiness from the top, you know, the top people in Iran, including all the way up to the Ayatollah, the White House Twitter account is out, you know, mocking Israeli for Israeli newly reelected Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. What do they have? A bunch of teenagers there in the White House? I mean, juvenile. While the leader of a country that is still on the State Department's list of countries that support terrorism, that's where Iran is. It's still on there, even though the Obama administration wants to think they're not. You know, you're out mocking your ally on Twitter while the people you're negotiating with who are on the state sponsor of terrorism list calling you a liar and that you're a devil. And by the way, in this negotiation, you know, there is not even a talk about their, you know, being they all are on the official list of terrorist states. Not even any talk about curtailing the terrorism. Not any talk about the people they're holding in Iran. Not any talk about, oh, no, that's a separate issue. Here's my prediction. There is going to be no deal, period, the end. The White House wants to say there's a deal. There's going to be no deal. There's no deal. There's going to be no deal. And it's not going to be because of anything other than the Iranians killing the deal. They have to know what they're doing. They have to know that they're in the middle of a negotiation and they're calling the president and I guess Kerry and everybody else liars. Now, either President Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry knew this when they walked away from the table and they're buffoons or they're liars or maybe a little of both. The president looks absolutely juvenile, idiotic. He should be embarrassed. The Iranians are embarrassing him. Meanwhile, Congress is getting ready, getting legislation ready for a couple of things. It's just broad points here. Number one, they want to say so on this deal. Congress wants to weigh in because they are the ones that put in the sanctions in the first place. And remember, not that long ago, six, seven, 8 months ago, last year and a half ago, whatever, you know, Obama has threatened in the past that the Iranians don't come to the table. We'll put on more sanctions. Well, now not so much. So Congress wants a say in the deal. They want oversight. President Obama says he's going to veto any oversight proposal by Congress. And that they want to put more sanctions on if they don't have a signed, good, acceptable deal by June 30th. And President Obama says he'd veto that too. Here's the only question. Are there going to be enough Democratic votes to override a veto? That's really all there's to it. Big fireworks this year, folks. Of all the issues where the Democrats may step in and say, wait a minute, hold on a minute. No. Of all the issues, that's a biggie. And, you know, Menendez is going to vote to override the veto. You could bet your sweet Biffy on that. The real wild card here are the Arabs, the Sunnis. You know, the Iranians are Shia. The Sunni Arabs, which makes up about 90% of the Middle East. You know, are all of them going to be get more nuclear weapons? Saudi Arabia has been trying to get nuclear weapons from Pakistan and said they were going to buy them. And maybe they already have them. Are they going to get more? Egypt, Qatar, you know, all the other countries in the Middle East, are they all going to get nuclear weapons? Turkey, as everybody. And I think that, A, number one, there's going to be no deal. B, there's going to be wider war in the Middle East. And C, I think we've got already a covert nuclear arms race in the Middle East right now. And then add that to the Iranians sending their navy to the coast of Yemen. Now, you know, down there, there's another choke point. There's the, you know, Strait of Hormuz, which is about 30 miles apart. And then there's the Strait of Mandeb. Or Mandeb is spelled with a M-A-N-D-A-B or M-A-N-D-E-B. But, you know, that's only 20 miles wide. And, you know, the Iranians have sent warships. So have the Egyptians. And they're sending troops. Why? Because they have to keep that open. I mean, you know, with this whole thing with the, you know, the Arab Spring, I mean, their tourism has been decimated. That was a big moneymaker for Egypt. And their other big moneymaker is the Suez Canal, where they charge for ships to come through. Just oil alone, about 3 million barrels a day come through the Suez Canal. Egypt cannot lose that revenue. And if that gets closed down, on top of that, shipping oil by, you know, tanker, the tankers have to then go all the way around the Horn of Africa and up the coast, and that's going to, you know, extend the supply, extend the delivery time. It could create all kinds of shortages, could drive the price up, all kinds of bad things could happen. So Egypt is going to be doing everything they can to keep that open. And so that's just an unbelievable deteriorating situation. The whole Yemen, Middle East thing. Listen, the Arabs attacked Israel in 67 and 73. They wanted to knock them out of the box. Now the Arabs, Sunnis, are so freaked out, they're joining with Israel against Iran. This is ominous, bad. And the Obama administration couldn't have screwed up. Their policy is wackadoodle. What is the policy? Like, I don't even know if they could coherently explain what their policy is in the Middle East. Unless they were truthful and say, well, we just want as much chaos as possible. And we want everybody to have a nuke. I don't know. I'm being sarcastic. But the policy is crazyville. There is no policy. Next up, the economy and another sign that the economy is tail spinning. It's, you know, I've been saying this to counteract the mainstream media with all this. Oh, we have a recovery. We have a recovery. Well, we had a recovery in stocks. We had a recovery for the 1%. But no, the rest of the country isn't recovering. It's not. We had some recovery in technology. Okay. But a recovery, a real recovery? No, there's no recovery. And the latest sign is wholesale prices plunged, and they're joining the declining factory orders are also declining. Those are two big ones. But yet, you know, they just also released the Fed minutes. The minutes come out, you know, a month ago. And here's the headline from, you know, the Fed. Fed officials split on when to increase interest rates. They're split. They're really thinking about this as if they don't know the economy is in deep, deep, severe trouble and QE 1, 2, 3 twist, it didn't work. And 0% interest rates, not working. Gregory Mannarino from TradersChoice.net, my friend, called me up today and said, hey, man, this is a circus. I mean, they're coming out. Oh, they're split. Oh, like, oh, they don't really know what to do. Some of them want to raise it. And some of them, he says, that's a circus. That's just for show. They know that if they raise rates, boom, they immediately kill the economy. And he says it really comes down to just two things. Either they raise rates and immediately kill the economy, or they let it go and they let it implode on its own. And so then the only question is, well, if they let it go, when does it implode? And this has been going on for a very long time. He also brought up and pointed out Christine Lagarde, you know, was lamenting the fact on CNBC. He says, oh, my God, I can't believe she's on there. She came out on CNBC talking about 0% interest rates and says, you know, that these 0% interest rates, you know, being, you know, this low for so long can, quote, cause, and this is the quote, cause asset overvaluation risks. Isn't that a nice way for saying bubble? And what happens to bubbles? They pop. Jamie Dimon of Chase, you know, he's the top guy at Chase, J.P. Morgan Chase, and he's out warning of what? Another calamity, another financial calamity, and that there may have, you know, a hard time finding, you know, liquid assets, might have a hard time finding, you know, a good collateral. Here's the thing to take away from all this, and I brought this up on a radio show I did this past week, and I said, you know, I was thinking about this. There's two things that everybody, whether they are on this show or whether I read about them in the papers or whatever, there's two things that are now consensus facts that everybody agrees. Number one, that this is unsustainable. What we're doing, 0% interest rates, the phony accounting, the criminal activity, the bond buying, the QE, all that crazy manipulation, all that, it's unsustainable. That's number one. What we're doing is unsustainable. Number two, we're headed for a financial calamity or a crash. Take your pick. Two things, unsustainable, headed for a crash. Now, when that happens, is it the end of this year, like a lot of the guests on this show have said? Is it 2016? When does it happen? When does the calamity happen? I don't know, but this has been going on for a long time, and the longer it goes on, the shorter the window is for, you know, when it ultimately has to end, because as everybody says, it's unsustainable. So anything that's not sustainable is going to stop. Now, I was a investigative correspondent for ABC and CNN in my career for about, you know, nine years. And you know what I noticed? I did a lot of financial fraud stories. And you know what I noticed about financial fraud is that one day they were working, boom, and then they just ended just like that. Bernie Madoff is a great example. He went off to spend the weekend at his Hampton home, and on Monday morning, he was in cuffs from the FBI. And I think this is going to be the same thing. It's just going to be over in a hurry. It's going to be over in a hurry. And also that Lagarde and people like Diamond and other people, when they start, you know, talking about this, you know, and it comes out in the mainstream vernacular, then can a crash or a calamity be far behind? Is it getting close?
There you have Greg Hunter. Update on Friday. I'll tell you what, if you're not being a little concerned about all of that, then you're not paying attention or you're watching
MSNBC.
That's
a little scary. I mean, it's reality, but that's a...
It's a reality check, absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, let's go to a quick break. We'll come back, a couple of headlines, and then we'll have Chris Ann on.
All right,
the
if
phone,
you want
hopefully.
To call in, the number here is 530-605-4567. This is KCNR, 1460 Community Radio for the North State.
Using junk science that wouldn't even meet the standards of a high school science fair. California Air Resources Board and the Environmental Protection Agency have written regulations that are devastating the California economy. They are costing people their jobs, their homes, their livelihoods, and their families. This must be stopped. Help us continue the fight against CARB. Go to standandfightclubinc.com now and contribute to keep the fight going.
Hey, it's Bad Bob, producer for Free Fire Radio, the very best way to start your day in the North State. Every Monday through Friday from 7 to 9, Carl and Linda Bott bring you what's happening in our community, from politics to entertainment and the issues you care about. If you like what you're hearing, won't you please tell a friend that local live radio is what we're all about? I love my job. Tune in and find out why, right here, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m., on the home of Free Fire Media, KCNR 1460.
Hello, folks. I'm here with our local hero, Bob the Drop from Mount Shasta Springwater. Bob, I want to thank you for all the support and good things that Mount Shasta Springwater does for our local communities.
You are welcome. And rest assured, we will continue to support our local friends and supply them with the best spring water in the world.
How can people get your great tasting spring water, Bob?
Just call us at 1-800-922-6227.
That's 1-800-922-6227?
Yes, for the healthiest, best tasting spring water in the world.
Howdy, folks. Nate Abarea here. Join me every Sunday at 2 p.m. for Destination North State. Each hour-long show will be direct from special spots in the heart of Northern California, featuring the people and the places that make this region so unique. You'll hear the beautiful and the gritty sides of the North State that we call our own. Made possible by Muse Concrete, Palomar Builders, and Yaks on the Five in Dunsmuir. It's Destination North State every Sunday at 2 p.m. right here on KCNR 1460.
KCNR, 1460 AM. If we're not talking about it, it's probably not important. KCNR, 1460 AM.
Yep, we're back. Sovereign Mind Radio, home of the Free Fire Community Radio for the North State. Get on board the crazy train. Because
we definitely have that going on.
I'll tell you what, this is exactly what our founding fathers warned us about. Ayn Rand, take your pick. I mean, let's throw another log onto the fire. Obamacare postponed until the 2018 elections, the Cadillac tax. In other words, they've postponed the tax that was supposed to be coming due on January 16th to 2018. You know, this.
Imagine that after the elections.
After the elections. They pushed it off. This is this crazy law is about raising taxes. So your benefits will become taxable income. They already taxed corporate profits three times, corporate tax, dividend tax, personal income tax. So they would love to connive a way to double tax a vacation. So you get a paid so you get a paid vacation without work. Yeah, whatever. Sounds like a benefit that some of these people in Congress should be, having to do themselves.
Yeah.
And
that's what our founding
White
fathers,
House.
You know, warned us about when they exempt themselves. I mean, how can they have our best interest at heart? I'm just saying.
There you have it. Well, you know, listening to Greg Hunter, everybody's pushed the control alt delete buttons because guess what's going to happen pretty soon? We're going to get a reset with the economy. We know it's coming. We've known it's been coming for a while. It's getting to the point where they can't hide it anymore in the mainstream. It's in Europe heavily, but don't worry. You haven't felt the pain yet.
Yep.
It's coming.
And just like you said, it's going to probably happen overnight. You know,
I'm not going to do the I told you so when that happens, but I'm going to do the I told you so because I've been trying to tell everybody for a long time. And there's so many people that are just too comfortable. They don't realize how painful this thing's going to be. Have they been preparing? Have you been, storing food? Have you been getting ready for it can never happen here. Oh, it's just happened in every other country in the world except here.
And there's signs here that, things like that are happening. I mean,
no.
The banking system, you can't deposit cash in the bank anymore.
I guess
when
I walk down the street and I see people sleeping in the doorways now, oh, that's just coinkydink, nothing to do with anything.
Just move along.
Crime rising. Oh, that's just normal stuff.
Has nothing
to do with the debasement of our currency and the monetary policy and the crazy train that's being run in Washington. No.
No. Nothing.
Yeah. There you have it.
Yeah.
So, take a good look at the economy right now because this is what you're going to see before it implodes. When this thing really starts to take off, you're going to have some real problems out there. You haven't really felt the pain yet, people, but there's a lot of people that are going to be, it's going to be undeniable here pretty soon to everybody. So,
and unfortunately, there's going to be people, the elderly and a few people that can't prepare that are going to get stuck in the crossfire, which is real unfortunate.
On that happy note, let's go to a break and hopefully we'll come back with Chris Hall and we'll talk to her about what she thinks is going on.
All right. If you want to call in, the number here is 530-605-4567. This is KCNR 1460.
And they call me the mouse.
And I'm Red. They call me the bear. How's California working out for you? Want to change it for the better?
Wake up to your chemical sunrise and tune in to the Jefferson State of Mind.
We'll be discussing representation, regulations, and restoring our republic. Catch us here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9.
On KCNR 1460.
I feel no shame. I'm proud of where I came from. I was born and best rodeo action on dirt. Get your discount tickets now at the Roundup office, redbluffroundup.com, by phone or Diamond W Westernware in Chico.
Captain Eric Lawrence needed help after a paralyzing injury in Afghanistan.
PBA helped me write my resume, got me a job interview. I got the job.
To learn more, visit PVA.org, a public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
At Mary's Pizza Shack, even the commercials are homemade.
This is awesome, Uncle Vince.
Are you ready to make your first Mary's delivery?
Yeah, what are we delivering?
You can order anything off Mary's menu for delivery. So we have spaghetti with meatballs, tortellini, bruschetta, chicken parmigiana, gnocchi.
Shh. Eyes on the road. Hands at 10 and 2.
10 and 2?
Test the horn.
I'm not going to test the horn.
Horn check.
Thanks for testing the horn. It works.
How's the engine temperature?
It's fine.
Maybe I should check on the meatballs in case they're rolling around back there.
No.
This is a pretty nice car. This isn't your car, is it?
Yeah, this is my car.
Really? Huh. Wow, wouldn't have guessed that.
Original recipes, original shack, Mary's Pizza Shack. Complete menu available for dine-in, takeout, and delivery in downtown Reading and at the Shasta outlets on Highway 273.
Thanks to citizens like you and your contributions to StandAndFightClubInc.com, January 30th and 31st, the first steps were taken to push back the California Air Resource Board and their regulations that are devastating the California economy. But now is not the time to give up the fight. Now is time to double down. Go to StandAndFightClubInc.com and you keep the contributions going and we'll keep the punches coming.
Whatever you're cooking smells good, Ma. Where's Dad?
I don't know. I think he's in the garage. Hey, tell him it's time for dinner.
Left step. Right step. Left step.
Nice heels, Dad. What are you doing?
I'm practicing for the walk a mile in her shoes.
What is that?
Every 90 seconds in this country, a woman is sexually assaulted. It's time for men like us to say no more. The Walk a Mile in Her Shoes is a call to men to educate and engage our community about a very serious subject to take action in preventing sexualized violence.
What can I do to help?
Every man should join us on Saturday, May 9th at 10 a.m. for the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes to benefit One Safe Place. Do like I did, son. Get a bunch of your friends together and visit the One Safe Place website at ospshasta.org and register for the walk. And here, I happen to have another pair of heels.
Left step, right step.
You guys make me so proud.
Please join the Walk a Mile chairman, Joe Comenti, and his family for the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes event, Saturday, May 9th in downtown Reading.
KCNR, 1460 AM, the most local programming in Northern California.
Back, Sovereign Mind Radio. Boy, that reminds me of the old days riding my motorcycle.
Ew, yeah. No comment.
Just hold on loosely. Anyway, we have our guest with us, I believe. We have the awesome Chris Ann Hall, who is one of the most dynamic speakers on constitutional authority, history, you name it. She's just
educator.
She's just awesome. Are you there, Chris Ann?
I am here.
Good morning.
All right. Very good.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Oh, thank you for being on the show. We really do appreciate it. We know that your time is very valuable and that you are, boy, you're a busy bee these days, aren't you?
Yeah, we stay busy, which is a really big blessing because the more, the busy we are, the more that means people want to know about the Constitution and want to be educated on these things.
That's
refreshing.
Cool. It is. I mean, I've been admiring you from afar for a long time, I got to say. I just love what you have to say. I love the way you say it. I love the way you lay out the history, everything. So, I just had to get that out of the way.
Right off the bat.
We do, We stay busy. I teach about 265 times in 22 states every year.
Wow.
Which means, unlike most people, I vacation at home once a month.
Wow. Listen, could you give us a little background, Chris, Chris-Ann, to, you know, what gives, you know, how did you acquire this, you know, where did you get your expertise? I know you were an attorney in Florida, but, you know, let the listeners out there, you know, give them a little bit of background so they know that you're just not, you know, talking from, you know, out your hat.
Well, I appreciate that vote of confidence, but, the first disclaimer I want to give you is that what I teach, I never learned in law school, because they never teach the Constitution in law school. What they teach is constitutional law, which teaches that, you know, judges and lawyers know more about the Constitution than the men who wrote it, and that the, men and what they wrote are irrelevant because they're nothing but a bunch of dead guys who simply don't know what kind of life we have today and couldn't possibly have known what we would see. And since the Constitution is a living, breathing document, it can mean whatever we want it to mean.
Yeah, bunch of dead slave owners is always the line.
Right, right. No, a bunch of, you know, rich white guys who didn't want to pay their taxes and wanted to oppress everybody else to do their work for them. And which is sort of funny because that's the definition of a socialist, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're exactly the opposite. I mean, they were so exactly the opposite that you can even twist that around, you know, and, to something else is amazing.
Yeah. And so, when I was working as a prosecutor in the state of Florida, I got a chance to go work for a constitutional law firm in, defending people in their First Amendment rights, because believe it or not, yes, today in America, people are arrested for handing out pamphlets and flyers mm-hmm. at parks and giving speeches on street corners and preaching on street corners and that sort of thing. So that's what I did for 2 years, defended people, traveled around the country, and defended them in their First Amendment rights. And then when that short stint with the not-for-profit was up, I went back to the state attorney's office. And while I was practicing this constitutional law, it occurred to me that so much of what we were doing was simply not jiving with what I had read from the framers. I picked up a book called Founding Brothers by Joseph Ellis and fell in love with the framers of our country. And then I read a book, 1776, by David McCullough, and I was hooked. I started then reading the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, the Madison's Notes. I started searching the Internet, finding every letter that they wrote to each other. I started reading John Locke and Hobbes and Montesquieu and Algernon. And it just absolutely infected me with this desire to know more, because everything that I had learned in law school was being shown to be incorrect based on what the men who wrote the document wanted it to be. And so I started then the local school board. When I came back to the state attorney's office, the local school board wanted me to instruct them on how to have prayer before the school board meetings without having the ACLU on their back. And then that's sort of where the teaching all started off. I started... From there, the local Republican Executive Committee wanted me to come teach them on the Constitution. The local middle school asked me to come teach their kids on the First Amendment. I had then people from Tea Parties wanting me to come and teach, and the local talk show wanted me to come and talk about on the air. We came and talked on the air about the unconstitutional nature of the Affordable Care Act. So this is just when the states were starting to first get a grasp of what was going on. And shortly after that, my boss sent me an email and told me that I had to cease and desist all my association with right-wing fringe groups.
Wow.
And that for me to teach this limited government thing that I'm teaching is an ethical conflict of interest because I work for the government.
Wow.
Welcome to a fundamentally transformed America.
Do we still have a constitution, Chris-Ann? I mean, it's there, but we're not using it.
Yeah, no, we have it.
It's just, we're not using it.
It's still there. It's still working. It is ready to be picked up and to be moved. It is ready for us to use it the way it's supposed to be used to limit the government. But the problem is that we, the people, have become so fundamentally ignorant of what it means and our responsibility to it, that it sometimes feels like it's not there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. I mean, I'm just thinking about Madison's, treatise in the Federalist Papers about states' rights. I know he was talking about the states standing up to the federal government, but wasn't he also talking about the people standing up and saying, no, enough's enough. We're not going to do it no matter what the federal government tells us.
Well, we have to understand that the states have no power outside the will and the authority of the people. So to say that the states are supposed to be doing these things is a bit of a missed application, because the states have no power to do things unless the people give them the power to do that. And the problem that we have with exercising our state rights and exercising the protections that our framers put in place is that we don't have enough people who know that this is the designed solution that our framers put in place. When I teach 700 years of history that it took to write the Constitution. Our constitutional history began in 1014. It didn't begin in 1776 or even with the Magna Carta. So it began 200 years before the Magna Carta. And when we teach this history, we see that our framers knew that history, built upon that history to give us our constitutional republic. They learned from their forefathers' mistakes, and they learned from their forefathers', good things, right? And so what we need to understand is they didn't invent anything. They were taking bits and pieces from history and correcting and making corrections and doing what they needed to do to secure a republic instead of a kingdom. So understanding that all of this stuff was not made up, that it was part of their learned plan, we should also understand that where we are today didn't take them by surprise. Our framers anticipated the day where we would have the federal government that we have. Remember the story about the lady who talked to Benjamin Franklin, said, "Mr. Franklin, what kind of government did you give us?" And he said, "A republic, if you can keep it." And so our framers knew that the attention and vigilance that was necessary to keep a republic would be very difficult for people in times of prosperity. So they gave us that plan, and when that plan that you're is exactly what you're talking about. The designed check and balance of the federal government is the state's powers, the combination of the Ninth and Tenth Amendments together. But we have to educate that. You know, you should try someday on your show having a call-in question. It's hard now with Google and everything. But see how many people know the Ninth Amendment.
Yeah, that's not very many people do at all. I mean, we know that the 10th Amendment is, you know, whatever wasn't said before is reserved to the states. But what does the 9th Amendment say?
Well, the 9th Amendment is the most important part of the entire Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The 9th Amendment is what makes us a republic and not a kingdom. And the 9th Amendment says the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And basically what the 9th Amendment is telling us is that every right in the universe belongs to the people, because we are the origin of the power.
Of all the rights.
We hold all the rights.
So that includes whatever's enumerated to the federal government as well. That's a right that was, you know, basically given over in trust that can be taken back.
Right. Well, and the interesting thing is, reading the 10th Amendment, we know that the government was never delegated any rights. They were only delegated power. A power is less than a right, because in order to have a power, you must possess the right. We are the possessors of the rights, and the 10th Amendment makes it clear that we delegated power. And so the government has no right to do anything. They simply have a power that we've delegated to them. Remember, Jefferson said in the Declaration of Independence that governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. But he continues and says, whenever any government operates contrary to those means, meaning contrary to the consent of the governed, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish that government, establishing new governments that will once again be governed by the consent of the people. So we didn't give up anything. We just simply, like you said, we delegated certain powers in trust for us. We delegated the majority of our power to the states. And then the states, when they created the Constitution, delegated a portion, a small portion of their power to the federal government. And so you see the hierarchy of government and power. It's people, then states, then federal.
Well, then let's take Obamacare for the example. I mean, you know, basically they did that whole thing without the consent of the governed. I mean, so what's the solution? We all rise up and just not do it, not pay the taxes. What's the solution? Just the education of the people to stand up for themselves and say enough is enough. What do we do?
Well, the solution is, again, rooted in education. We have to first understand that health care is not one of those powers that was ever delegated to the federal government. James Madison, we call him the father of the Constitution, so we should treat him like that. And he tells us in Federalist Papers 45 that the powers delegated by the Constitution to the federal government are few and defined. Those that remain in the states are numerous and indefinite. He says the powers delegated to the federal government by the Constitution are reserved to external objects. Now, that's founders speak for foreign affairs. And then he doesn't let us guess or require us to have the Supreme Court tell us what external objects means, because the very next statement he tells us what it means. He says that things like war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. So if it is not a foreign affair issue, if it's not something that has to do with the relationship of the Union with foreign governments, then Madison says everything else remains and is reserved to the states.
Well, doesn't
healthcare is a power that's reserved to the states?
Doesn't that kind of contradict what you're taught in law school? I know I've taken some law courses, and they basically, you know, cite the Supremacy Clause as the, you know, the whatever we think, you know, resides, you know, ultimately the power of in the Supreme Court and the federal government through the Supremacy Clause.
Yeah, well, that just shows you how illiterate our law professors are. Because, and they count on the fact that their students are never actually going to take the time to read the Supremacy Clause. Because the Supremacy Clause does not give the federal government carte blanche to do whatever they want to do. The Supremacy Clause reads, this Constitution, comma, and the laws of the United States, which are made in pursuance thereof, semicolon, are the supreme law of the land. Reading the Supremacy Clause tells us that only the Constitution is the supreme law of the land unconditionally. And the only way the laws of the United States, meaning anything that the federal government does, is supreme law of the land, is if it is made in pursuance to the Constitution. And that means that anything, any power that is exercised outside that original delegation is outside the Constitution, is not made in pursuance thereof, and it cannot be the supreme law of the land. Because think about it, if the federal government can write any law or regulation that's supreme, then the Constitution is no longer supreme, because they could simply write a regulation or a law that says, you know, that completely contradicts the Constitution, and then the Constitution doesn't, there's no point. It's a paradox.
Can you say
our founders didn't create a paradox.
Can we say Obamacare?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
well, I mean, there's so many other things. We are looking at Obamacare right now because it's tax time and it's going to hit us in our pockets. But, I mean, how many of us know about the Food Safety Modernization Act, where the federal government passed, by the way, by overwhelming majority in our conservative Republican House, that put the Department of Homeland Security, the EPA, the FDA, and seven other executive agencies in charge of regulating farmers markets, roadside fruit stands, and even the tomatoes you grow in the backyard and the chickens that you raise for yourself.
Well, the EPA, all of it. I mean, they've got a law saying that they don't want you, or they're getting ready to pass a law saying that you can't barbecue because of the air quality.
Right. Right. And these are the things that education solves, because we understand that this is not a power that is rightly wielded by the federal government. And the solution, once we get that education, is realizing, number one, as Thomas Jefferson said, that if the government, the feds are using a power that's not been delegated, the exercise of that power is void and has no force. It's an illegal act. So it has no force at all. And understanding that it has no force of law and has no force we can be held in consequence of, we simply have the right to say, we will not comply. And we will not allow you to enforce that law here either. Now, we can do that on the individual basis, but that's not the grand protection that our framers put in place. The grand protection that our framers put in place was the fact that the states would have the power to do that for us. The states created the federal government. The states delegated power to the federal government. So it's up to the states in between the federal government and the taking of our rights.
And we're starting to see that more and more. I mean, you're starting to see Arizona revolt on laws that the federal government's passing. And I just saw a thing in New Mexico this morning, you know, where they're passing a law to negate or make irrelevant some of the federal government's laws. Now, you know, you go back to Frederick Batiste, and he said law is force. And if they can force you to do it, it's legal. Now, that's contrary to the Constitution, but what do we do? The federal government has a lot of force right now.
Well, but you see, Bastiat also said that there is no difference between a thief stealing your money and the government stealing your money. It's still theft, even if it's done through the form of legal plunder. And so what we need to know is, again, what is the purpose of the Constitution? What are the limitations of the federal government? And who are the chief enforcers? The chief enforcers of the Constitution are the states. And so the power of the states to simply say no is our greatest power. And there are actually, this is the dirty little secret nobody wants you to know about. States are standing up. There, you know, there are over now 200 pieces of legislation that have either been passed or in the works of being passed and been presented to state houses and senates to nullify federal government laws. Not only that, these local municipalities and counties are standing up as well and saying, look, if my states won't protect our people, we will protect them, because these are the powers that are reserved to us, and because they're reserved to us, we have the right to defend them.
And isn't that when the sheriffs come in play, too? That you need to have your a constitutional sheriff involved in your community?
Right. You need to have a constitutional sheriff. And, you know, I mean, we have groups. I'm not the only one that's teaching these things. We have the 10th Amendment Center, who are the forefront of encouraging states to rights. They have legislation waiting in tow for people to just come and pick up and present to their state governments for passing that nullifies these federal constitutional federal laws. We have Sheriff Richard Mack and the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, who is probably literally working himself to death to educate our local peacekeepers, sheriffs, and police departments, their obligation under their oath to stand up against unconstitutional federal power.
So are you saying...
And I've written a book about this whole thing called Sovereign Duty. And what Sovereign Duty does is it ties all this stuff together, all the states' rights, the sheriffs, and everything together, not based on opinion, but based on historical fact and the words and the plans of the framers themselves.
So
in that book is cited back to original source.
So they can get the book at your website, I see, at chrisannhall.com, and they scroll down, and then the book there is there, and I'm sure they can get a copy through amazon.com is what
it's
saying.
And I have to say, I've been reading the book, and the book is got a lot of good information, and it's very easy to understand for the people out there. You know, a lot of that stuff, some of the books get where it's hard to understand, and you've laid it out really well in that book.
Well, thank you very much. That means a lot to me, because that's really the focus of what we do. That's the focus of all my books, is to simply take what the framers said. I'm not here to make you think that I'm brilliant, so I don't want to, you know, sound like a lawyer when I'm writing stuff. It doesn't do us any good if we cannot, if we can't digest it. And it means a lot to me to hear you say that we have succeeded in that.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, listen, I got a couple things. I mean, are you seeing a revival of liberty in America now? And can you tell us about liberty versus freedom and what the difference is that people should understand?
You know what? Not only am I seeing a revival of liberty, let me tell you something. I am doing what we call the Liberty First Tour. I like I told you, I travel all over the country. And I am, my family and I are now teaching in Washington and Oregon. And we started off last Tuesday. Tuesday morning, I spent the whole morning through lunch with a group of Washington legislators. They called themselves the Liberty Caucus. I'm sorry, the Freedom Caucus. It's headed by Representative Matt Shea, who is a real, real states' rights hero. And I spent the morning with them, talking to them about these states' rights issues, and they were so supercharged that they are trying to get me back. I mean, they were trying to get me back next week to come and teach the House of Representatives my presentation on the constitutional role of the state legislature.
I saw you on Facebook, and we were trying to figure out where you were. I saw you there with Alan Keyes as well.
Yes, and I have taught this constitutional role of state legislators to Utah, Kansas, and Arizona, and the Washington guys are really charged up. But here's the big thing about this revival. We are seeing a revival in our states and in our legislatures, which is really, really good. But this week in Washington has just been absolutely amazing. I taught a group in, I can't remember the name of the city. They're going to hate me for this. They had, they end up having four times the attendance that they had anticipated for our training. Nice. And then we had three Tea Party groups come together to bring me in there. And then I moved to Prosser, Washington. We had almost 200 people. But here's the thing. In both of these meetings, over one-third of the attendees were under the age of 25.
Wow.
That's what we need.
Nice.
Yeah, the youth has got
to... I taught a five-hour workshop in the Dalles, Oregon, just Saturday. I had the local correctional facility brought, I think around 12 of the young people from their juvenile detention center to come and listen to a five-hour workshop on the history of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and its application. And we had a Christian school who brought their students. I think over half the attendees for my five-hour workshop we're all under the age of 25.
That is so nice to hear.
Listen, we got about a minute left, and then they're going to cut us off at the top of the hour for commercial breaks. So anything else that we can add real quick here? And or can we keep you after the top of the hour, or do you have to go?
No, I have to go, but I appreciate that. You know, I think all I would ask is for people to please go to the website and search around. We have videos. We have articles, we have podcasts, I have my own radio show, all of these things geared towards teaching the Constitution and its application. And we need to be part of a Liberty First Brigade where we're teaching about Liberty First principles.
And before they cut us off, I want to thank you again so much for coming on and sharing with us. It was great having you.
Thanks, Chris Ann. God bless you.
Have a great day. They're going to cut us off here and travel safely.
All right, Hour 2 of Sovereign Minds is next here at KCNR Shasta Redding.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. Still waiting for Hillary Clinton to formally announce her second attempt to win the White House today. Some of the men she may be running against are reacting. This is Republican presidential candidate Rand Paul.
I think the thing is about the Clintons is that there's a certain sense that they think they're above the law.
He spoke to NBC TV. Republican National Committee Chairman Reince Priebus was over on CBS.
If you were me and you were chairman of the national party and you had someone on the ticket that would unite your party, would help you raise a lot of money and help you recruit a ton of volunteers. You'd want nothing more than Hillary Clinton to be on the other side.
Tomorrow it will be Republican Senator Marco Rubio tossing his hat into the ring. He'll make the announcement in Florida. House Republicans have released a blueprint of things they'd like to do before the summer break. SRN's Wally Hines looks ahead.
Expect a full schedule and likely some late nights when lawmakers return to Washington from their two-week spring break. In a letter to Republican colleagues, Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy details plans to hammer out a final budget agreement with the Senate and start work on appropriations bills. A bigger challenge could be the effort to renew the Patriot Act, which expires at the end of May. And there will be legislation this coming week to stop the IRS from targeting conservative groups. That's passed the House before, but there's hope this time it'll make it through the Republican-controlled Senate. Wally Hines, SRN News, Capitol Hill.
Israel's prime minister says sanctions should be maintained against Iran until it ends its regional aggression. Benjamin Netanyahu says the lifting of sanctions should be contingent upon Iran ending its, quote, worldwide terrorism and its threats to annihilate Israel. A suspected car bomb has gone off at the entrance of a police station in Egypt's northern Sinai province. At least one police officer has been killed, about a score of civilians injured. This is SRN News.
Two little tablets is all it takes to make your thin hair feel and look thicker and fuller. Guaranteed. Viviscal is the number one drug-free hair growth supplement in the U.S., with one box being sold every minute globally. It's clinically researched to promote existing hair growth for men and women. And now a 90-day supply of Viviscal is offered in your area risk-free plus free shipping. Call 800-884-1759. Viviscal nourishes thinning hair from within. You'll love your hair growth results. Guaranteed. Viviscal is so effective. It's recommended by top doctors. Here's Dr. Grant Stevens, board-certified plastic surgeon.
I feel confident recommending Viviscal to women with hair loss, thinning hair, or even dry or brittle hair. It's 100% drug-free, and it's backed by years of clinical research.
Want to try Viviscal? Every listener that calls now gets a 90-day risk-free supply plus free shipping. Call now, 800-884-1759. 800-884-1759. That's 800-884-1759.
The attorney for a Southern California man who was beaten by several sheriff's deputies following a chase involving a stolen horse says that his client is doing fairly well and recovering in jail. Francis Pusak's violent arrest, filmed by a TV news helicopter, has led to an FBI civil rights investigation and 10 deputies being placed on leave pending an internal probe. San Bernardino County Sheriff John McMahon says the video appears to show excessive use of force. Pusak's lawyer wouldn't say why his client fled by car and then on horseback, but he said it was the wrong thing to do. Greenpeace says six activists opposed to offshore drilling in the Arctic have abandoned a Seattle-bound drill rig they boarded in the Pacific Ocean 6 days ago. The organization says rough seas prompted the decision. The protesters rappelled off the rig and got into inflatable boats before returning to a Greenpeace ship stationed nearby. Meantime, a district judge in Anchorage has granted Royal Dutch Shell a restraining order. This is SRN News. Edward Snowden has some fans in New York's arts community, apparently. They recently demonstrated their support for the NSA leaker in a most unique way.
A 4-foot-high, 100-pound sculpted bust of the whistleblower showed up in Brooklyn's Fort Greene Park one early morning. The Animal New York website reports a small group of artists' admirers was behind the stunt. The bust was hoisted to the top of a Revolutionary War memorial, but it didn't stay there long. City Parks officials removed it.
SRN's Rich Thomason. Today is Sunday, April 12th, the 102nd day of 2015. There are 263 days left in the year. On this date in history, 1861, the Civil War began as Confederate forces opened fire on Fort Sumter in South Carolina. And on this date in 1955, a salk vaccine against polio was declared safe and effective. More details on these and other stories at srnnews.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll be right back. nation for a war, but we came to fight.
We are American.
Somebody's gotta stand up.
Stand up.
Somebody's gotta do what's right. We're rising cause we're fed up. Got our house in order and got yours inside.
Well, we're back. Sovereign Mind Radio, the place to get your news before the revolution starts. Yeah, when we did that commercial, who'd have thought? Maybe we did. Anyway, we want to, you know, thank our special guest, Chris Ann Hall, for coming on again. And, you know, I think she's just one of the most dynamic people I've ever met. And so go to her website at chrisannhall.com and get her book, Sovereign Duty. And, wake up, people.
Let's like I say, that book's great. It's in real simple form, so... I mean, kids can read it pretty much. You know, teenagers could read the book and comprehend what she's got going on.
There you have it.
We will take credit for inspiring the title of her book.
There we have. Sovereign. There you have it. We're going to have to put a patent or a trademark on Sovereign here. We're Sovereign Mind Radio. Got it all started. No, not really. We're just kidding. But anyway.
We're just part, one of the cogs in the wheel.
We're just one of the cogs in the wheel. One of the bricks in the wall.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, you know.
We got a breaking story.
We have a breaking story out there. We need to Anyway, there is a problem up in Oregon. It seems like that there is a Bundy Ranch type of standoff brewing in Southern Oregon between miners and the BLM. That would be the Bureau of Land Management, another federal agency that has overstepped its boundaries. And based on
its power.
Based on the conversation we just had, it's like, you know, we're getting back to basics here. You know, the basics are, standing up to the government and telling them, no, we're not going to do it. And at some point in time, we're willing to fight.
Yeah. Well, that's what's going to happen there in Oregon, it sounds like, is BLM has come in and told the miners that they can no longer mine there. And with no authority, really. And it's not like they have any court papers or anything like that. They just decided that...
We're from the government.
Exactly.
Shut up. Give us all your stuff and go back to work. And no, wait a minute. Don't go back to work. Oh, yeah, we got the investigative reporting music.
Yeah.
So yes, actually, I guess this just didn't make the news on the other stations and the other...
Not yet, yeah. You know, this mine's been in operation since, like, 1870.
Yeah, so now the federal government, overstepping their power, comes in to say that you must cease and desist and issues an order, accompanied by the Josephine County Sheriff. But that's a problem because people are saying, wait a minute, and why isn't the Josephine County Sheriff standing up for the people?
Exactly, instead, like he's supposed to,
instead of against them and for the BLM. And that's where it's going to take people in your area to elect a constitutional sheriff. And if your sheriff's not up on the Constitution and doesn't care about the Constitution and cares more about getting federal money to fight drugs, then maybe we need to have a conversation about getting somebody to reelect your local sheriff.
Yeah, they took an oath.
They took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, not protect and defend the federal government from people who are trying to follow the Constitution. There's just a little problem there. So I think we don't want to, you know, beat a dead horse here, so to speak, even though we might. But I think we're going to get our guest on the air here in just a second.
Yeah, he should be calling back here in just a little bit. We'll have Dan Johnson from Panda, and we're going to be setting up, sounds like him there, so we can do a training May 11th at the Tea Party, but this is kind of setting the grounds to what we can do to whether it's constitutional sheriffs or
this
what.
This feathers right into what we're talking about. You have to understand and educate yourself on how to elect people properly and
be
effective in holding their feet to the fire, not just give them a pass. Oh, they do one thing good, and oh, you just give them a pass on everything else because they did one thing good. Oh, but there's nobody else, and so we should just sit around and kiss their feet and hope they listen to us. Let's write a bunch of letters and be nice to them. No!
And we hear it all the time. People say, well, what can I do? What can I do? Well, we're trying to give you the tools so you know what to do. And that's one reason that we're having Dan on. And I believe he's on the line right now.
You got to quit listening to the Republicans tell you that the way to get their ear is by being nice to them. No, you have to hold their feet to the fire.
Quit listening to the government.
Quit listening to the government telling you how to make them respond. Anyway, with that, we have Dan from Panda on the line, I believe.
Good
how
morning,
you doing, Dan?
Good morning. That is one of the greatest intros I've ever heard.
Well,
we're working it.
You're the man, Dan. I mean, you're the guy. You're the spear point on the on this stuff as far as getting effective relationships with your politicians so that they actually listen to you and be effective with them.
Well, I appreciate that, and I just want to make one small correction. My hat I'm wearing today is the Solutions Institute, not necessarily Panda.
Oh, okay. Well, it's the Solutions Institute then. I like that too.
We like that too. We need that.
Well, maybe give us a little background, Dan, for the people, the listeners that don't know anything about you. You know, we know you're with Panda and then now with Solutions Group. Tell us about what you do, who you are, and how you roll.
Sure. So really briefly, I had a lot of people pour a lot of their knowledge and mentorship into me, that pretty much everything I know is the result of somebody taking their time and sitting down with me and saying, hey, this is what I learned and you can use it. But I got involved in, never really wanted to get involved in politics, poly being many and ticks being blood-sucking creatures. But I eventually did get involved at my local city council meeting about 3 years ago at 18, and we all went down to a local city council meeting to ask them to not pass a or not comply with a law passed by the federal government called the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act, which in brief allows the military to detain a person without charge or trial and hold them indefinitely. And so we just asked them, will you uphold your oath and guarantee this won't happen here? And the response we got from my mayor, about 30 of us that went down to the second city council meeting, the response I got from my mayor was interesting. He sent an email to the head of city council and copied me on it and said, quote, these students should have taken government 160. They don't know the inner workings of our national government, and it's up to us to educate them.
Wow. That's really nice of them to, you know, take you by the hand and lead you down the aisle.
Yeah.
Right. And it was my first realization that because I had been brought up to believe that people wanted you to get involved as a young person. They wanted you out there. They wanted you to make your voice known. Only, and I realized that.
I was going to say only if you support the position they want you to.
And you're knocking on doors to help them get elected. Yes. And once you're done knocking on the doors, though, once you're done putting the signs in their yard, once you're done being their little gopher, then they want you to go home and wait till the next election. And they don't want to listen to your ideas. They don't want to hear you out, and they don't want to represent you. And that was a really tough lesson for me to learn, and I didn't really take it to heart for another year and a half. But after that year and a half, you know, it was October of 2013, and with People Against the NDAA, now the largest organization in the nation, fighting the NDAA, we were still no more effective than anybody who was the smallest, because we had passed really nothing worth the protection of the rights and liberties of the people of that county, city, state, etc. And it was October 2013. I sat down with my team and I said, "Okay, we have to make a radical shift in strategy. We have to try something, because if we don't win soon, nobody's going to take us seriously. This is not worth it, and it's not working." And so we made two radical shifts in strategy. We went from a hierarchical leadership to a swarm, and we went from access politics to power politics.
Can you explain that for us, Dan, the difference? Because people hear that, access politics and power politics, and they don't really understand why one is more effective. I mean, they think that being nice to their politician and is the way to go, because if you can bend his ear and you have contact with him, you know, and you can get in front of him, that somehow that's going to be effective, when I don't believe it is at all.
Well, there's a really strong temptation to view politicians as people. And
it sounds harsh, but you know what you're saying is reality.
Well, and I'll explain why. Okay, so you take someone, let's say they're really good intention, they have a lot of great ideas, and they go into a system. Well, what is a government, or what is a political system known as a government or a state? It is a system that thrives regardless of whether people want to fund it or not. And so the politician is not looking to help out a lot of different people. If you're a grocery store owner, you only need to serve a certain section of the populace in order to stay in business. Also, every person who stops shopping at your store immediately hurts you. And so you want to do your best to provide great customer service to all of your customers. If you're in a government, you don't care until there's 51%, because I can't hurt you by pulling my vote, because that's all I can do. I can't pull my money or you lock me up and throw me in a cage. I can pull my vote, but I have to get 51% of the voting populace to agree with me that we should pull our votes. And so the politician, by the very nature of their job, their elected job, they are prone to bribery, they're prone to corruption, they're prone to dishonesty, because they always have to represent the 51%, or they're never going to stay in their office. And so that's why they don't care about your issue. And that's why you can't treat them as people. You have to treat them as cogs in a system, and you have to provide peer pressure from the outside. As I call it, they've got a lot of peer pressure from the inside. All of their colleagues, everyone who's been in the political game forever, a lot of peer pressure on the inside. You have to provide the attack dogs from the outside to keep them in line. And that's the difference between access and power politics. I'll explain it this way. Access politics is what most people try to do with their representative because they view them as people. You call them up and they look at their phone, they go, oh my God, it's Joe. Hey, Joe, how are you? Yeah, let's go out to a picnic and we'll take the kids and yeah, we'll have a great time and et cetera, et cetera, and they hang up the phone. And you work for their campaigns and you push for their issues and you hang out with them and you do a lot of things for this person to get in their good graces. And they'll respond by bringing you to the press conferences, by bringing you to the banquets and bringing you to the dinners. And you have a really good relationship with them. But remember, the only reason they're still there is because they're upholding the status quo.
Yeah, and that, you that have seems to be the case with the Tea Parties a lot. A lot of them were practicing the access politics, which is, yeah, let's all be together and party and have fun and we'll talk about all the issues. But nothing ever seems to change.
If you want to defend the status quo, that's a great idea. Access politics is wonderful because that's what defends the 51%, yeah, by definition, the status quo. But you give up that one thing. You get all the glory, you get all the fame, you get all of the recognition, but you give up with access politics the ability to change the status quo.
Yeah.
And to me, that's too much of a sacrifice.
Yeah, because if we're working towards following the Constitution and we've got, and some of these politicians, they do some of the right stuff. I mean, our local guys are good on veterans issues and he should be. These veterans should be taken care of. But at the same time, he votes to keep Boehner involved. He does other things that you just can't give him a pass on. And then we catch a lot of flack for calling him out on the carpet for that from a lot of the other guys because their positions are, well, he's our only guy. He's the Republican. You got to stick with the Republicans, to keep going in the right direction. And I just don't see that being correct. We got to go to a break here at another minute or so. So give us a short answer on that if you can, Dan, and then we'll come back after this break.
Well, just to briefly expound on that, the other option is power politics. And that is blood, sweat, tears. You hawk your politician. Every time they make a vote you don't agree with, you hawk them like there's no tomorrow. You bring in the attack dogs. But what you do is you create more peer pressure from the outside than on the inside. A great example of this, whether you like him or not, is presidential candidate Rand Paul. Rand Paul, to a lot of people, has gone too far to the neoconservative side, and yet they're okay with it because, oh, well, he's the best we've got. Well, he's not going to be the best you've got if you keep allowing the peer pressure to only come from the inside and not from the outside.
Very good. Wow.
So if you want to call in and have a question or comment for Dan, the number here is 530-605-4567. This is KCNR, 1460 Community Radio for the North State.
using junk science that wouldn't even meet the standards of a high school science fair. California Air Resources Board and the Environmental Protection Agency have written regulations that are devastating the California economy. They are costing people their jobs, their homes, their livelihoods, and their families. This must be stopped. Help us continue the fight against CARB. Go to standandfightclubinc.com now and contribute to keep the fight going.
Summer is here and it's time to enjoy the great outdoors. Whether you're headed to the lake, Bernie Falls, going fishing, or throwing a barbecue, Mighty Fine Foods is your one-stop shop for summer fun. Stop by the meat department for the best prices around and try our own country sausage made in-store. Mighty Fine has over 1,000 drinks to choose from, and we barbecue every Friday all summer long. So take up a tri-tip, rack of ribs, barbecue chicken, or a Polish dog. Stop by the deli for fried chicken or a sandwich made just the way you like it. We are a locally owned and operated family company at 299 and Deschutes in Bella Vista. Mighty Fine Foods, your one-stop shop on the way to the lake.
America's original extreme sport. The Red Bluff Roundup is on. April 17th, 18th, and 19th. 3 days of the best rodeo action on dirt. Get your discount tickets now at the Roundup office, redbluffroundup.com, by phone or Diamond W Westernware in Chico.
Captain Eric Lawrence needed help after a paralyzing injury in Afghanistan.
PVA helped me write my resume, got me a job interview. I got the job.
To learn more, visit PVA.org. A public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Hi, I'm Kayla, and they call me the Mouse.
And I'm Red, they call me the Bear. How's California working out for you? Want to change it for the better?
Wake up to your chemical sunrise and tune in to the Jefferson State of Mind.
We'll be discussing representation, regulations, and restoring our republic. Catch us here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9.
On KCNR 1460.
I feel no shame, I'm proud of where I came from. I was born and raised in the boondocks.
KCNR, 1460 AM. If we're not talking about it, it's probably not important. KCNR, 1460 AM.
Listen, we've got Dan Johnson with us on the line, but before we get back to him, we've got Red, I think, is calling in with some breaking news on the minor altercation with BLM up in Oregon. Are you there, Red?
I am here.
What's going on, Red?
Well, we came appraised of a situation that's building in southern Oregon outside of Grants Pass and Josephine County last night. Not sure how long my cell reception will last, so I'll be quick. Essentially, there is what's known as the Galise Mining District, about 10 miles west of Grants Pass along 199. BLM has been involved in a couple of court battles with the miners there since 2012. In March of this year, BLM issued two stop orders to the miners to stop mining on the property. The miners immediately filed were awarded an injunction against those two stop orders, and that is in the court system right now. Essentially, these mining claims have existed since 1876. They're actually older than Josephine County itself. Now, BLM, acting under a 1995 law called the Surface Mineral Act or the Surface Resource Act, is attempting to say that they have jurisdiction over these mining claims and are trying to push these guys off of the land, essentially. The one in contention is known as the Sugar Pine mining claim. This guy actually has the original signed document for the claim from 1876 that has been handed down from his family. These particular mining claims, because of their age, were grandfathered in and are exempt under that 1995 ruling. So while this is in court pending the fight, BLM has decided to try to preempt the court decision and move ahead anyways. They showed up yesterday with a cease and desist order on these mining claims and told the miners, you are to cease and desist You are to remove all mining equipment, all traces of mining, including the buildings that have existed there, by April 25th. The miners have issued a statement that this is an illegal order. They have asked BLM for their authorization and their jurisdiction, and BLM has essentially responded that their authority in the season.
Well, it sounds like Red's cutting out.
Yeah.
And, wow, it sounds like a job for the militia or the Oath Keepers or something. So
I do believe that they're on their way to help support that.
Very good. Well, thanks a lot for the good work, Red. Keep it up out there. I don't know if you're still on there with your cell phone or you can hear us, but hey, thanks a lot, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Yeah, we'll keep everybody updated on that. And
all right.
So we're back with Dan Johnson.
Very good. Dan, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Sorry about that, but I'll tell you what, things are, doesn't it seem like the headlines are just getting faster and faster and faster here?
Well, you know, I'm kind of biased because we advise about, at this point, 40-plus activist groups around the country, so most of what I see is good news. So I'm kind of biased on that, unfortunately.
Well, we want good news. Even good news is coming faster and faster. I mean, it just seems like the treadmill's getting faster to me, you know.
Well, and we like to hear the good news because there's so much bad out there that it's nice to hear, like, from you and Chris Ann Hall about people that are getting engaged and the difference it is making and the young people and everything. So that's wonderful.
Very good. Anyway, let's get back to our what we're talking about here. So you're going to be teaching a class in Reading Tea Party at some point, or Reading somewhere?
May 11th. We have him. We're going to Skype Dan Johnson in, and we are going to do well, go ahead, Dan. Tell him what we're planning on doing on that day.
So I'll be giving my presentation, Politics, What They Didn't Want You to Know, which is the culmination of my 3 years' experience in leading a grassroots national organization from a Twitter account to what it became, as well as passing legislation in 7 jurisdictions, including the capital of New York, four other cities and a county, or 5 other cities. I can't do math. I'm not a math person. a few other cities and a county, and we also just got word that using these tactics, these exact tactics, this is about a month ago or so, the grassroots Alaska team that Solutions Institute has been advising for a while recently defeated a massive zoning code overhaul. They brought 400 people to the first meeting, 500 people to the second meeting. They threatened the borough assembly with losing their jobs, and that was a good threat because they'd already used these power politics tactics to remove 3 of them from office. And they successfully killed the new zoning ordinance that would have completely destroyed life in Kodiak and was a result of suggestions under the United Nations Agenda 21 conferences, was completely and utterly defeated, and once again marking another success for the power politics strategy.
Which people need to learn about because, like here in Reading, a lot of people say, well, we're back to the access thing. Well, we have access, so they'll do what we want. Well, it doesn't work that way, you know.
Are they doing what you want now? Is that a future tense thing?
Yeah, exactly.
What's
you know?
Going to change? What's the definition of insanity? Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, we need to learn to also pass some legislation as well. I mean, we need to get on board with some of these other states and counties and cities that are passing legislation in order to stop the federal government overreach, to get our compliance in our local officials. Because, you know, like, for example, our guys here at the Board of Supervisors, other than being completely dishonest most of the time, except for one person, you know, they really don't care at this point, in my opinion, about anything that the people have to say because they just turn their backs.
Well, we haven't applied the power strategy yet, and this will give the people the opportunity with Dan that he can show them that it really does work, and this is what we have to do in order to take back our communities and hold their feet to the fire on issues.
I'd like to make one small correction to what you said there. They do care what the people have to say. They do not care what you have to say.
Well, there you
go. They're always going to represent the 51%, and
that's
all
true.
You have to do is A, look like you have the 51%, or B, actually have the 51%. Perception is as good as reality.
Well, that's a good thing to know.
Well, there you have it. So that's what we got to do, is we've got to get more and more people, you know, understanding this power of politics and getting involved with the people who are actually trying to get some headway and some change and get these politicians to pay attention. You know, you were talking about up there, they got rid of some of them. How so? By the recall process, and you're talking about the Alaskan group up there?
Yeah, so there was actually elections coming up. The Borough Assembly made the mistake of introducing what Grassroots Alaska nicknamed the Be Nice to Politicians decorum amendment. And essentially what this decorum amendment said is, if you speak to the Borough Assembly, you have to speak directly to the Borough Assembly. You can't speak to the crowd. You can't insult the Assembly members. You can't question the motives of the Assembly members. And you can't accuse the Assembly members of doing anything. And the head of the Assembly who introduced this decorum amendment, she was headed to the State House. There was a guarantee she was going to win the election, no doubt about it. And I remember when I was up in Alaska in May, I gave him about a week of in-person training when I was up in Alaska in May. And I had a lady from a local legislative radio station interview me. She was a little bit on the older side. She had a microphone that wasn't USB. It was still like from the time where we had things that weren't computers recording things, I guess. I'm too young to know that.
That's so, kind of a long time ago.
I was telling her that there is no such thing as playing dirty in politics so long as you do not lose your integrity. All of this, for lack of a better word, crap about being nice to your politicians, being nice to your representatives. Are you nice to the jail guard who says, oh, yeah, I'm going to take most of your freedom? Be nice to me, though. Be polite to me. No, you're not nice to that jail guard. And if you're the prisoner making fun of the jail guard who keeps beating up the prisoners and has the key, you know, the founder said that the representatives have the key to your liberty and freedom, which is why you need to keep your government in check.
Right.
Just why your government needs to fear you. So that sounds like a prison guard to me. And so if you have a prison guard who's continually beating up the prisoners, continually restricting their freedom, and one of the prisoners starts making fun of him, one of the prisoners starts picketing in front of his guard cell, one of the prisoners starts standing up to him, who's in the wrong here? Is it the prisoner because he's not speaking to the guard? Oh, dear honorable sir, thank you so much for giving me what little of my freedom I still have. Like, who's in the wrong here? And her eyeballs got about as wide as spaceships. But most people don't understand the difference between access and power politics. But those people in Alaska, they grasped it. They got it. And so that election, that the lady who was supposed to win the State House, the head of the Assembly who was supposed to win the State House, she lost her election by a ratio of 3-1.
Wow.
So she lost the Assembly. She lost, and she was projected to win. She lost the Assembly. She lost the State House. And two other Assembly members who supported it with her went down. Immediately after that happened, guess what? The city council, who turned down the NDAA resolution by a vote of 4-3, two of the people who killed that resolution immediately called one of the leaders of Grassroots Alaska, apologizing profusely and blubbering at the mouth for daring to stand against them. That's what happens when you power politics, because you have to place right above offending people.
Yeah, I totally agree. We just in the past week or so, we got Harry Reid coming out saying that, oh, it's okay to lie up there in the Senate floor because they won. You know, a lot of people equate what were the power politics with that kind of politics, which is, you know, that's scumbag politics. They're lying, and, you know, we're telling the truth. How can you get that confused?
Yeah, just don't lose your integrity. Your integrity is the most important thing you have. Be honest.
Yep.
But I'm still being honest when I'm calling out, you know, my favorite representative for voting the way they did. That's still being honest. It may not be polite. Okay, well, my rights are more important than some social construct of politeness. It's not a matter of lying. It's not a matter of cheating. You don't have to do that. And I recommend not doing it, because you'll tear yourself and you'll tear your coalition apart.
Yeah.
But the reason that politicians try to call anything confrontational fighting dirty is because they're scared of it.
Well, I mean, an example is our local guy here. You know, first he votes for the Carmody bus bill, you know, and because that Boehner was supposed to, support them against the immigration bill. And so what do? They vote Boehner in, and then Boehner stabs everybody in the back on the immigration bill while, you know, he knows that he's got enough people voting for it so that he can then pander to his constituents and vote against it. You know, reminiscent of Kerry back in the first presidential election saying, I voted for it before I voted against it. But we're supposed to keep quiet about this stuff is what the consensus has been.
And it's supposed to somehow be a surprise.
Right.
I've had people tell me, oh, well, my local government is corrupt. I never believe they're so corrupt and they're so awful. I'm like, welcome to the club.
Yeah, you know, what it is when you vote for a guy, you've invested in him. And I think that's part of the problem is that, you know, when you vote for your guy, now you got to back him, you got to defend him, and you got to, I think that's a lot of the mindset is that they feel like because they did vote for him, they've got to defend him against all the other people who didn't.
But you didn't vote for him, and we don't vote for people. Why do you think a politician is called out for flip-flopping? And we think flip-flopping is a bad idea. Well, what flip-flopping is called in the science community is changing your mind based on new ideas. You didn't vote for the politician. You voted for the ideas he or she espoused. And if you can't defend those ideas, if they don't defend those ideas, why are you still defending the person? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, see, that's exactly what you said is exactly right. You know, people have the idea that they're voting for those ideas when they're voting for those people instead of following to see whether they're going to actually uphold those principles and ideas and defend them when they don't. And that's where I think a lot of the confusion
And we've had that happen right here with our own city council. They ran with ideas and made promises to people, and they're not fulfilling those promises. So the people voted for them on the premise they were going to, on the idea.
That they were going to follow through, and they didn't.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I'll talk about in May on the 11th is that never cheer them before they cross the finish line.
Yeah. In other words, that's what they want you to do. They want you to endorse them. They want you to go out in public and give them accolades and praise them. And then after it's all over and they got your vote, it's like, hey, you know, I don't even. Then you're back to access politics. Please listen to me.
Yep.
Yeah, and they just go, well, no, we're going to, you know, I mean, like the state of Jefferson's a classic example here, you know, where they got 350 people show up for the state of Jefferson just to listen to the presentation that they have, and three people show up against it, and for whatever reason, the politicians go, no, we're not going to do that. We don't even want to get it in front of the Board of Supervisors. We're just going to ignore the whole thing. And
then we're going to make it so you have to have a two-thirds vote, I believe it was, to even bring it back to the Board of Supervisors.
I guess they just forgot to mention that they're getting carbon credits through the mitigation bank in Hawes, and maybe that's funding their...
And they didn't. They didn't think the people would have the power or the knowledge to go around them, that they can still move forward with the state of Jefferson.
So we're really looking forward to having you here, Dan, and giving us, you know, a primer on how to, you know, get this effective type of a strategy into enough people to where we start making a difference.
Well, this is something I would like all of your listeners to understand. And actually, ask kind of the hosts, ask you guys, what is a synonym for law?
A synonym for law? That would be like a police guy having a donut? No. synonym for law. I would think that would be maybe an edict or a... that's a good question.
Yeah.
What is a synonym?
Is it?
An opinion. Scientifically, you cannot point to a reason why the law is right. You cannot point to a reason why what the law says is right. It's impossible. Using the law to back up your opinion is using an opinion to back up your opinion. It's nonsensical.
Well, you know what makes
the law.
Well, I was just going to say, you know what. You know, I should have said was, you know, what Bastiat said: law is force. If they can force you to do it, then it's legal. So
it's opinion with force behind it.
Yeah.
But it's understanding that it's opinion. Like, you can get, it doesn't matter what jurisdiction or, like, people will talk about, it's good to know the laws. It's good to know how coordination works. It's good to know how jurisdiction works. It's good to know the laws. But your town council, if enough people show up and demand it, will paint the entire town, every single building in it, bright blue. It does not matter how nonsensical the idea is. Your town, your representatives will take it on if they believe that that is the reason that they will be in office. Let me give you an example of this. In small town, North Carolina, and I forget exactly which town it is. I would love to call them out. It's North something. In North Carolina, this was back when we were trying the access politics. And so one of the people we worked with, Brian Hill, presented a resolution to this council, and it was Mayodan City Council. It was the Mayodan City Council of Mayodan, North Carolina. And he presents the resolution to City Council, and he tries to talk to them and convince them that they should stand up against military indefinite detention because it only violates every single amendment of the Constitution. And they completely turned him down, and then they turned people on him in the end, and they tried to go after him even further than just that council meeting. That was an example of access politics, an example of power politics. Albany, New York. Now, Albany, New York, for your listeners who don't know much about that city, is a one-party city. That means every single elected position is held by a Democrat. Now, I don't really care if you're Democrat or Republican, but one-party cities are significantly more difficult nuts to crack than two-party cities because you don't even have a power differential. So we go into Albany with this power politics idea, and we're told, okay, we have a councilman who wants to introduce it, Anton Konev, who came from Russia, saw the camps there, and wanted to keep that from happening here in the United States. He wants to introduce it, but we are going to lose 9-6 without a shadow of a doubt. And we launched a massive campaign. We sent 3,000 phone calls and emails to that council. We had a couple of hundred flyers posted around the city. We had a coalition of 15 organizations inside Albany, New York, and about 10 or 15 outside sending letters to the council. We had 100 people there on the day of the vote, more people than ever seen in Albany City Council. In fact, the council chambers didn't hold them all. They were standing in the atrium. We also had a live band there. That was fun. That's a little bit of a cool add-on for when you go to a city council meeting. But all of those people showed up. All that we were told and told and told, we are going to lose. The vote is going to be 9-6. You cannot change their minds. It's Albany, New York. On the day of the vote, just after the vote, the chair of city council leans down to a representative and says, I have never seen this many people get involved on any issue in my entire life. And you know what the final vote was? The final vote, after 2 months, only 2 months of preparation and fighting, the final vote was 11-0.
Wow.
Wow.
They were scared to vote against us. That's how well it works.
Well, with that, we need to go to a break and thank our sponsors. If you want to call in, the number here is 530-605-4567. This is KCNR 1460.
Want to treat me right? Y'all can take the change and stick it out of sight. Don't tread on me. Don't you tread on me. Hey, are you ready for some good news? We're gonna take back our country.
Thanks to citizens like you and your contributions to StandAndFightClubInc.com, January 30th and 31st, the first steps were taken to push back the California Air Resource Board and their regulations that are devastating the California economy. But now is not the time to give up the fight. Now is time to double down. Go to StandAndFightClubInc.com and you keep the contributions going and we'll keep the punches coming.
Howdy, folks. Nate Abarea here. Join me every Sunday at 2 p.m. for Destination North State. Each hour-long show will be direct from special spots in the heart of Northern California, featuring the people and the places that make this region so unique. You'll hear the beautiful and the gritty sides of the North State that we call our own. Made possible by Muse Concrete, Palomar Builders, and Yaks on the Five in Dunsmuir. It's Destination North State every Sunday at 2 p.m. right here on KCNR 1460.
Summer is here, and it's time to enjoy the great outdoors. Whether you're headed to the lake, Bernie Falls, going fishing, or throwing a barbecue, Mighty Fine Foods is your one-stop shop for summer fun. Stop by the meat department for the best prices around and try our own country sausage made in-store. Mighty Fine has over 1,000 drinks to choose from, and we barbecue every Friday all summer long. So pick up a tri-tip, rack of ribs, barbecue chicken, or a Polish dog. Stop by the deli for fried chicken or a sandwich made just the way you like it. We are a locally owned and operated family company at 299 and Deschutes in Bella Vista. Mighty Fine Foods, your one-stop shop on the way to the lake.
Call 243-8400, Preferred Carpet Care.
Oh no, dirty carpets! So I call Preferred Carpet Care. You know they've been voted the best of the North State, and now my carpets look like new. Preferred Carpet Care, clean, efficient, and professional. I love the way my carpets look. Remember the number.
243-8400, Preferred Carpet Care.
KCNR, 1460 AM, the most local programming in Northern California.
Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is what I feel when we're together. Brighter than a lucky penny. When you're near, the rain goes, disappears, dear, and I feel so fine. Just to know that you are mine. My life is sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. That's how this refrain goes. So come on, join in.
I love that. Lollipops, sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows.
But I don't know if I love it, but
pretty sure there's some storm clouds in the future for a few politicians in the area. Yeah.
Across the board, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're back with Dan Johnson. And tell us, where do they get a hold of you, Dan, if they want to get more involved in the teaching that you're doing besides coming to the upcoming event? I mean, a website address, anything that you want to get out there?
Absolutely. So I'm the president of the Solutions Institute, which is, as to my knowledge, America's first activist consulting firm. It was kind of interesting starting the Solutions Institute. I looked around for people who were teaching how you get engaged, how you win, how you get involved, how you make things better. And everyone wanted you to listen to their why first. Well, here's why you should get involved. Well, here's why you should get involved. Well, if I have dirt in my hand and I want to get it off, you telling me I have dirt in my hand is great, but not helping me at all. And so I started the Solutions Institute. I asked several advisors to join me. We have 25 advisors on board. We are, like I said, America's first activist consulting firm. We have 40 clients so far. What we do is we teach people how to make themselves better, how to get engaged. I mean, an example, we took a blog in Snohomish County, Washington, from about 60 visits a day as Snohomish County Corruption to the Snohomish County Reporter, which is getting about 3,000 to 6,000 visits a week.
Wow.
And we helped Grassroots Alaska with the Solutions Institute. We've helped rally people, 200 people in 72 hours to a protest with the Solutions Institute. I mean, we are a network of experts, and we want to help people make their group better and more effective, work smarter instead of harder. So you can find us at solutions-institute.org. And if I may, a tool that we launched recently, based on my experience with coalition building, we've been developing a tool for about a year to solve the rather, to me, silly problem of coalition building, which is crucial to winning, which is that in order to build a coalition, you have to find people on Google, you have to show up to a town meeting, and you have to have a whole lot of dumb luck to go with it. There's not a single other industry that you have that problem with except activism. And we launched the Activist Map this past weekend. The Activist Map is a 50-state interactive map drilled down to the county. It's a heat map of all the activist organizations eventually across the United States. And anyone, as long as they're not a party or a political candidate, can add their organization and add their contact information, and then find organizations in their state who they want to connect with and they want a coalition with that they didn't even know existed.
Wow. That's,
very nice.
That's very cool. Yeah, I'm at the site right now, and I've pulled up tools, and I see GroupSpeak. I'm pretty sure that's purposely spelled wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah, GroupSpeak is an action alert tool that takes petitions to a new level by A, actually making sure your petition goes through, and B, including a phone number and a pro-con so the petition is more trustworthy and actually has a better effect on the elected official.
Well, I'm trying to get the map to come
up. I am too, but
I
it's just loading and loading. Maybe it's the internet today here, but we will definitely check
that
out.
Should be activistmap.org for anybody listening.
Oh, activist. Yeah, because you have the pull down menu on tools, and it goes to SI activist map, and that's where I'm trying to go through is that. And that takes you there, but it's not loading for some reason. I'm not sure if it's us or you or what. You might check that out.
I just loaded the site, so it shouldn't be a problem on our end.
Well, then it must be us.
It could be the internet here. Yeah. Well, Bob's got it up on his with no problem, so.
Oh, maybe it's our computers. We need more RAM or
sabotage.
Yeah, that's not to say there's no activists on the other guy's side either.
Well, that's a great tool for a lot of us to know about and use, that's for sure, because you don't know. It's hard to search out different groups sometimes.
Absolutely. And we started with the goal, the Solutions Institute started with the goal of revolutionizing activism, and we were serious.
Well, good. That's what we need. And especially, you know, as young as you are. I mean, I hate to say as young as you are because you don't sound like you're, what are you, 20, 21 now?
21, yeah.
Yeah, 21. And well, I'll tell you what, we need an army of you guys getting involved. And, you know, because I'm pushing on 60 here. And, you know, I've been at this for 30 years, you know, trying to, you know, ring the bell, spread the word, and do my little part. I specialize in monetary policy and so forth. But, yeah, you know, it's good to see you guys, younger people, coming in with new ideas and new, you know, you guys are, you know, you are different. You understand the mechanics of networking and social media a lot more than a lot of us do. So, you know, my kudos, my hats off to you. Kudos for what you're doing, Dan.
Well, and speaking to that issue, the question that comes up a lot for me when I go speak somewhere is, well, how do you get young people involved?
It's a good question.
That's a big one.
We have that question.
And I don't like the question because it assumes that you can somehow manipulate someone into getting involved. There's an underlying assumption behind the question. And but to answer, to go into, I think, a better question is how do we appeal to young people so they want to get engaged?
That's
with
a better
us?
Way. Yeah, to
what do we need to do to appeal to them so they make the choice to work with us? And I would point people to, regardless of whether you agree with it or not, I mean, I don't agree with a lot of things I study, but I study them. Regardless of whether you agree with it or not, the Ron Paul Revolution. Look at the average age of the person in the Ron Paul presidential campaign, Ron Paul Revolution.
Absolutely.
The average age of the person was like around 30, maybe, 20, 29, 28. And what the big difference they made was they made a couple differences. Number one is they listened to young people. A lot of groups want, oh, well, we need young people involved to pound the pavement, and we need young people involved to hang signs. Well, that's great for some of the young people who want to do that. And that's a great avenue for people to kind of start to get engaged. But if you're not willing to listen to the ideas of your young people and you're not willing to look past their age and past their experience and take their ideas into account and treat them as an equal member of the team, you're not going to bring anybody in. And number two is if you, you know, go to China and Manchuria and you try to speak English, everybody would kind of look at you funny. But a lot of the complaints I would get is, oh, well, these young kids, they're always on their phone and texting, and they're always on Facebook, and they're always doing this, that, and the other. I said, okay, so you go to China, and you speak English, and what you sound like is you sound like going to China, speaking English, and trying to complain about, man, all these people don't speak English. Man, I really want them to speak English. Da, 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 da. It sounds silly. And it's the same thing. If you want to bring people in, speak their language. Either bring somebody in who knows how to speak their language or learn their language yourself. Stop trying to teach them a different language. Those are the two best tips I could have for organizations who want to bring in young people.
Well, we always talk about the Constitution and freedom. I mean, my idea was always to sell them the idea of liberty would be enough, but obviously that is not enough. I think they maybe need to understand the tenets of it or something. I mean, I don't speak the language, obviously, and evidently you do, Dan. So, you know, I'm hearing what you're saying, and I love what you're saying, because we get stuck in our frameworks of thought process sometimes, and it's hard to break out of that.
Well, we had an activist picnic yesterday that I held, a little bit of a Midwest activist picnic with some friends and some activist friends. And I had some people show up who weren't activists by any stretch. They were young people, and they really weren't terribly interested in a lot of the stuff we were talking about. But one of the guys there was talking about how to beat speeding tickets. And that night, they were pulled over, those young people were pulled over for speeding. And they used that technique, and they got off with a warning. And they called me immediately, oh, my God, thank you so much for inviting me to something like that. And so a lot of it is, how does it apply to their daily life now? How does that activism protect them now? How does, you know, if you – it's probably a little bit too not exactly G-rated for the radio show, but if you've ever seen John Oliver's interview with Edward Snowden, which has about almost 10 million views now. He did an interview with Edward Snowden on something that applies directly to young people related to the NSA, and something that speaks their language, something that speaks our language. And when he did that, he caught a lot of people's attention and put it in a way people could understand. That's something that I would recommend groups who want to appeal to young people to do.
Well, you know, I've caught a couple of John Oliver's show. The one that I refer to is the Civil Forfeiture, and that one really struck me. I mean, I think the guy's comically brilliant, but he's also good at bringing out a problem in such a way, you know, that it gives it a different viewpoint. And I'll have to review that one and take a look at it. I hear what you're saying, though.
Oh, and we're having to change our mindset, you know, of how to reach out to these young people in order to get them to be activists with us.
I think what Dan said, I think what you said, Dan, is very insightful, yeah, as far as that, you know, there's a perception of the kids. They're lazy. They're not honest. There's these perceptions of these kids.
Well, they're being browbeaten so much with that stuff that they get turned off.
Well, and the example of the speeding ticket. And most adults would say, well, you know, if you're speeding, you should pay the ticket. When conversely, the real deal is that the police and the regulations are out of control, and they are stealing everybody's freedom bit by bit by bit on everything. And you got to find a place to draw the line on some of those issues, whether it's speeding or smoking pot or whatever it happens to
be. Well, I think he made a good point when he said that putting them on the same level, you know, adults and myself included, we're guilty a lot of times that we're, because we've lived longer, that we have more knowledge, and we kind of put ourselves up above them. And we need to be on the more of the same playing field.
Well, liberty is the ability to make your own mistakes, and you learn, and you have to have the ability to fail, I guess. So maybe you can add to that, Dan. We're down to the last 2 minutes, so they're going to cut us off in 2 minutes. So throw it out there. Give us your best shot, and then we'll be speaking to you soon here in Reading.
Yeah, you know, I'm really looking forward to speaking. I believe it is on May 11th in Reading at 6:30, I think.
Yeah, we're going to bring you on at 6:30 at the church, 2570 South Bonneview.
And that's Monday night.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to speaking then. And as a Solutions Institute, I mean, we've gotten to the point where we're looking to expand. So if you know of people, we have a personal training program, which is kind of like a gym trainer. So you'd have a personal trainer talk to you every couple of weeks, teach you the new exercises,
et cetera. Awesome.
We have a personal training program with the Solutions Institute for organizations. And you can look at the testimonials on our website. You can look at the press releases on our website, what we've been able to do for people. But we are looking to expand. Well, I do not want to have the problem of not enough people to help, and I'm sure you guys can help solve that.
Well, we're gonna talk about that when we see you in person, Dan. And I believe that I do have some groups that we can add to your list of patrons.
Awesome.
Very good.
Right. Well, thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, we want to thank you.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, well, solutions-institute.org, activistmap.org to add your organization to the map. And I'm really looking forward to being there and speaking to a full crowd on May 11th.
Very good. Right. Well, thank you and have a great day and be safe.
I guess we're down to the bottom of the show here, the end of it. Once again, remember, the amateurs built the Ark and professionals built the Titanic. Government is not reason. It is not eloquence. It is force, and force like fire is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. You've been listening to Sovereign Mind Radio, where we put principles above parties.
This has been KCNR 1460 Community Radio for the North State.
And this is KCNR Shasta Redding.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. Everybody's talking about Hillary Clinton announcing for president, something she is expected to do formally later today. Here's Mitt Romney on Fox News.
She's a creature of Washington. How many years did she say? 18 years she hasn't driven a car. She's been driven by Secret Service and other securities. I mean, she's been there a long time. I think people want to see change, want to see something new, and Hillary Clinton is just not that person.
And what about her missing emails, Secretary of State John Kerry?
We will release all the emails that are appropriate based on classification. We're obviously looking through them to determine that no classified information is inadvertently released.
Kerry talked to CBS TV. Meanwhile, Senator Marco Rubio, who would like to be the Republican presidential nominee, is set to officially enter the race tomorrow. Iran is making waves with pronouncements that any nuclear deal would result in the immediate lifting of U.S. sanctions. More on that from SBS.